This is a very special and a very important 30 minutes that we're going to spend with Dr. Evan Neville from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. This is Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Dr. Evan Neville, who is a cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. He earned his medical degree from Rowan University of Osteopathic Medicine in Stratford, New Jersey. After medical school, Dr. Neville completed a residency in internal medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health Palisades Medical Center in New Jersey. He went on to complete a fellowship in cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center in Browns Mills, New Jersey. Dr. Neville's special interests include preventative cardiology and nuclear cardiology. He has participated in clinical research studies and authored articles in peer-reviewed medical journals, specialty training cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center in Browns Mills, New Jersey, and as I mentioned, board certified in internal medicine. And we really have a very important topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, because these are things that if we're not paying attention to them, perhaps And I feel confident that Dr. Neville will inspire you to pay attention to them, because they're very important. So our topic is know your numbers, and we're going to be talking about a variety of different numbers. It is a pleasure to welcome you, Dr. Neville.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to meet you as well.
Thank you, sir. So let's get right into it. Know your numbers. When it comes to heart health, what numbers are we talking about?
So in general, what the numbers we're talking about typically include a cholesterol or lipid panel, blood glucose levels, blood pressure, and your BMI, which is the body mass index. And what these numbers give me as a cardiologist is tells me, does this particular patient have any known modifiable risk factors that might predispose them to having heart disease in the future, assuming they don't have it already?
And you can learn a lot just from the blood test, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. We can learn a tremendous amount about the patient, and what, and we can classify their risks moving forward for, again, what we call, and start sort of tailoring some management and lifestyle recommendations that, again, prevent cardiovascular disease from occurring in the first place, which is what we call primary prevention. And if they already have an established diagnosis of heart disease, it prevents it from getting worse or having another event, which is what we call secondary prevention.
And this BMI, is it more important than ever? I remember, I don't remember the year, but I remember when there was a almost like a switch up done, and all of a sudden the numbers became more strict. So you were just fine until the revision. Then all of a sudden you could actually prove out to be obese or something. And it's like, oh my God, yesterday I was good, today I'm obese. But the BMI is very important, isn't it?
Absolutely, very important. And you did make a very important note that, yes, it has changed. Some of the classifications have changed. And that typically occurs when clinical research and data is collected in epidemiologic studies that suggest that a new cutoff might exist, that patients that may have been borderline before or fall into a different category actually have a higher risk of developing heart disease and other problems. So they change the designation because, again, BMI is typically what it is basically the patient's weight in kilograms divided by their height in meters squared. Mm. It gives us a numeric value, and then based on that value, it places them into a category of being underweight, normal weight, overweight, or obese. So normal weight is when the BMI is between 18.5 and 24.9. Overweight is 25 or greater, and then obese is when it hits 30. So 25 to 30 is overweight, 30 or more is obese. And then that further is broken down into three stages based on how obese a patient is. So class one, class two, class three. Three is being the highest with the BMI greater than 40. And as you go up in category, the risks for having health consequences and, for my purposes, for having cardiovascular disease actually go up.
And we learned a lot. I mean, for example, COVID-19, carrying extra weight was a real risk factor, wasn't it? Or isn't it? It's still here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, during the pandemic, a lot of the information that we had at the time, of course, this was a new pandemic, was a new disease that we had not yet seen before this. So we were learning and collecting data as we went along about what risk factors predispose people, one person from getting a mild flu-like illness versus another person requiring a ventilator. And something that I tried to encourage my friends and family, even as well as my patients, that even if you are just overweight, if you have no other risk factors, that was actually something that patients were predisposed to having more severe illness with. So just by being overweight and even obese, patients had a higher risk of having severe illness with COVID-19.
And I'm not losing sight of the fact that I'm speaking to a talented cardiologist, but I want to throw this in here. This almost winter season that we're in now, we've got this triple threat going. You've still got COVID-19. You have the flu. I understand the vaccine is a good match this year, is what I've been told. And you have this RSV that I think a lot of people never even really knew about. And I don't know if that is because wearing masks for a couple of years and not being around as many people, that people have, you know, lost some of the immunity to certain things. But there is a triple threat that's at play right now, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And RSV is typically a virus that mostly, like when I was in medical school residency, there was predominantly a pediatric virus that was only affecting kids. Kids get RSV all the time. And then they spread it to their immediate family members who are adults and typically would have mild illness. But people are having more severe illness now than they had in years prior. And like you said, people were wearing masks. People were, you know, quarantining, isolating, weren't going out as much. So we did see a decrease in other viral respiratory illnesses, which we are now seeing coming back with vengeance. So it's very important to be careful, protect yourself, and take necessary precautions.
Because you can get more than one of these at the same time. Then you're in a potential world of hurt.
Absolutely. You could have all three at the same time.
Yeah.
So there are different viruses, and all you have to do is be exposed to it.
Dr. Neville, in days gone by, if you had a total cholesterol of under 200, your doctor would tell you, have a great life. You are good to go. But we now know that you could be under 200. You could be nicely under 200, but your good cholesterol may be too low and your bad cholesterol be too high. So it's not the total number. It's really the breakdown of good versus bad, isn't it?
Absolutely. No question about that. So definitely was previously considered 200 cutoff. You're below that. You're good to go. Have a nice day. Unfortunately, all of the trials, and which has been significantly studied, have shown that things like LDL has a tremendous association with the development of cardiovascular disease. And having a HDL is wonderful because what HDL is the good cholesterol. So that is a transport protein that takes cholesterol from the tissues through the blood back to the liver to be processed and ultimately excreted, so get rid of it. So essentially you consider HDL as it removes cholesterol from the blood and tissues, whereas LDL takes it from the liver and then brings it to the tissues, including the blood vessels, which is how you get atherosclerosis. There's other components of the lipid panel that are also important and give a indication for a higher cardiovascular disease risk, things like VLDL, which is very low density lipoprotein. And in addition to that, there's other biomarkers we can use, which each by themselves tells us, yes, there's an increased risk of heart disease, cardiovascular disease. But then some of these values we now have developed into indications for starting medications, such as statins, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, absolutely, it's not just the total cholesterol anymore.
We are visiting with Dr. Evan Neville, cardiologist from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. The topic this half hour is Know Your Numbers, and we're talking about some of them right here, right now. Let's go to another one that I think is very important, and that is glucose. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So glucose is really important for us as cardiologists because diabetes is a very, very strong, very potent risk factor for the development of cardiovascular disease. In fact, as I just mentioned, there are a number of indications we have for starting medication to treat elevated cholesterol levels. And some of them are strict cutoffs, such as a bad cholesterol of LDL of 190 or more. However, if any patient age 40 to 75 years old, if they have diabetes, the guidelines all state you start a statin immediately. Again, this is because elevated glucose levels in the blood, it actually promotes dysfunction of the cells that line the blood vessels and especially the blood vessels in the heart called endothelial cells. And that dysfunction is something that, again, leads to the development of atherosclerosis, plaques building up in the walls of the arteries and leading to heart disease in the future. So getting that under control is really important. So again, so diabetes, and we diagnose that by one of three technically four ways. So one is a fasting blood glucose level of 126 or greater. Boom, you have a diagnosis. Hemoglobin A1C, which is a blood test that is a three-month average of your blood sugars. And if that is 6.5% or more, boom, you have a diagnosis. Mm. If you had a patient who wasn't fasting and you just checked a blood glucose level, if it was 200 or more, and they also had some symptoms of diabetes, which include things like increased thirst, they're urinating a lot more frequently, among others, you have the diagnosis. And finally, what's called a oral glucose tolerance test. You have a patient take an oral glucose load. They take a pill of glucose. They check the sugars 2 hours later. If the sugars are 200 or more, boom, you have your diagnosis. And then again, lowering the risk of developing future complications as a result of diabetes is of paramount importance, because not only is it important for the heart, it's important for the eyes, the kidneys. The nerves don't like a high sugar environment either. So although sugar tastes great when you're eating it, it is the organs and the blood vessels do not like a high level of sugar.
So if you had a fasting blood sugar level of 99 or below, you are normal.
Correct.
If you were at 99, is that something, you know, because if you were at 100, now you'd be pre-diabetes, so you'd like to be lower than 99 if at all possible, correct?
Correct. It is generally something you strive for, but in general, this is a snapshot in time, right? So this is what is the risk and what is the number right now at this moment. We draw your blood, and at that exact moment, that's your blood sugar, and we base risk of future events, future problems off of that number. But usually it's something that would be checked in the future. But if it's in the 90s and the patient has no known history of heart disease, they're not a diabetic, that is a very encouraging thing to see.
When we come back, more, of course, with Dr. Evan Neville, and we're going to move on to blood pressure. What is the latest information on blood pressure and where and how to be in the best range? This is obviously a very important part of Dr. Neville's program today, because also this is one of those, like glucose, it can be for many, many years. You just keep eating the sugar and the desserts and you keep on going. And then all of a sudden, you know, your eyes and amputating digits and things, you just really have to pay attention. That's why this is such an important segment, episode of Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents on Knowing Your Numbers. So blood pressure front and center when we come back with Dr. Evan Neville. I am Hurley in the Morning. This is WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 South Jersey's number one news talk radio station, all because of you, and we know it. Back with a good doctor in just a few minutes. It's the only break we'll take during Dr. Neville's participation here this morning. Thank you and welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour with Dr. Evan Neville, not two Evans, that was just me stammering. Dr. Evan Neville, cardiologist from Deborah Heart and Lung Center, and the topic this half hour is Know Your Numbers. And if you've missed any, catch it on the podcast later today. When it's uploaded, you can then download it directly to your device. I would definitely make it a point, because if you're just joining us midstream, you've missed a lot. You've missed about total cholesterol and glucose and some other things that you'll want to catch up on. So you can do that. Listen on demand. So let your heart not be troubled on that. Before we get to blood pressure, a listener wrote in, I think, a really good question, unless Dr. Neville tells me that I'm very dumb and this is a very dumb question. But ask Dr. Neville, if a person who is carrying around a few extra pounds, but who is active and gets regular exercise, can actually be in better shape than someone who is slim but sedentary. Is that a good question, Dr. Neville? I think it is.
That's a fantastic question. So a couple of things. Number one, I will say that some patients are very active, run marathons, and for genetic reasons, it's difficult for them to shed some pounds. But if they're able to run a marathon and their lipid levels are fine, their glucose is fine, and it's just the BMI, my concerns are pretty low. So another thing, one of the limitations of BMI is that it doesn't factor in the differences in mass between somebody who is, let's say, a professional bodybuilder, and their body is all muscle and there's no fat at all. Mm. So like, for example, Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime, or anybody who is a competitive weightlifter who has very low fat percentage of their body and their muscle mass is enormous, they're actually, if you did their BMI calculation, they would be obese or morbidly obese. Because again, the calculation, one of the limitations is the fact that it doesn't differentiate between the mass differences between a fat cell, but between fatty tissue and muscle. So although that person is very muscular, very fit, very healthy, if he just went by the BMI calculation, it would suggest that they are morbidly obese and sedentary. But physical activity is incredibly important for cardiovascular health. And so somebody is young and thin but doesn't exercise, maybe they smoke, you know, they still have an elevated risk compared to somebody who might be a little overweight but is very active, exercises regularly, and has normal blood tests, if you will.
Very interesting. Reminder, Deborah Heart and Lung Center is accepting new patients. You can call 609-621-2080 or feel free to navigate. It's very, very well set up. Demanddeborah.org, and you will see the hyperlink to do the same. So you can do it whether you'd like to speak to someone or you can do it digitally from any of your smartphones, laptops, desktops, iPads, you name it. 609-621-2080 or demanddeborah.org. We're visiting with Dr. Evan Neville, cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. The topic this half hour is Know Your Numbers. This is a biggie. It's all been important, but this is a big deal too. Blood pressure. Dr. Neville, what is the latest information on blood pressure, and where and how can we make it that we're in the best range?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, as you mentioned, extraordinarily important, and in fact, it's one of the most modifiable risk factors for heart disease that there is. So, generally speaking, I'll talk about some cutoffs. So, as a lot of people, some are not aware, but generally speaking, the ideal blood pressure is somewhere around 120 over 80. The top number is called your systolic blood pressure. So that's the blood pressure generated when your heart contracts. And then when it relaxes is the bottom number, that's your diastolic blood pressure, which you usually want to be about 80. So there's different stages of high blood pressure. So as you go up a little bit, we have what's called prehypertension. And that's when the top number is between 120 and 139. And the bottom number is in the 80s, so 80 to 89. Stage 1 hypertension is 140 to 159, over 90 to 99. And stage 2 hypertension is anything greater than 160 over 100. Typically for prehypertension patients, we would recommend, or even stage 1, possibly initially starting with some diet and exercise. Some of the things that are major contributors to a patient's blood pressure, number 1 being overweight or obese, losing weight. There's a several millimeters of mercury reduction in blood pressure with every 5 to 10 pounds of weight loss, as well as staying away from salt. Sodium is a big one. So I try to tell any patient who has prehypertension, stage 1 or stage 2 hypertension, to try to monitor how much sodium they take in their diet and try to limit it to no more than 2,000 milligrams a day. Stage 2 hypertensives, we usually will start at least one or two medications. Stage 1, if they have, if we see an elevated blood pressure, we'll recheck at the next visit after trying diet and lifestyle changes. And if those fail and the blood pressure is still high, I might start a low dose of a blood pressure medication to keep it down. Unfortunately, blood pressure, again, a lot of people don't feel it. They don't know that it's high unless it's critically high, in which case they will typically present to the emergency room with chest pain or a terrible headache with maybe some visual disturbances. But in bar none, you know, heart disease is a disease that develops over a long period of time for the most part, and trying to control all these modifiable risk factors, including blood pressure, is critically important to preventing that from happening in the future.
Dr. Neville, in advance of your program, I actually took a hard look at this where I thought, wow, you know, if it's high, you might not even know it is. But if it's low, do you actually get symptoms? Is this one of those sort of, you know, things that most laypersons we think would be just the opposite? Oh, my gosh, you have high blood pressure. You must really know it. And if it's low, you might not know it. But it's just the opposite, isn't it?
Absolutely. So it's typically patients who have low blood pressure, they will often experience dizziness, lightheadedness, especially when they change positions. They stand up from a seated position, like in a chair. They get out of the chair, they feel dizzy, lightheaded. As well as getting out of bed, or just in general, all around, at all times, if they're feeling lightheaded. Sometimes this can lead to loss of consciousness. Patients might pass out. And that could be a sign of a lot of different things. Severe heart failure can do that. Patients who have systemic infections, something that we call sepsis or septic shock. So those can be all emergencies. So from a less severe, that's more of the severe end of the spectrum, but the less severe end of the spectrum, it's typically patients are dehydrated. Maybe they're taking blood medications for other things, such as, you know, if someone's taking something for an enlarged prostate, those medications can cause blood pressure lowering. But in general, keeping a close eye on things is always preferred, especially if you have symptoms. The first thing you'll have done, if you have any symptoms like that, you go to the doctor, they're going to check your blood pressure.
I don't want to.
That's usually the first sign.
I'm not asking you, Dr. Neville, to pick our poison, but hypertension, high blood pressure versus low blood pressure, it's not as though low blood pressure is the optimal choice out of the two. It's also not good, right?
Oh, no, it can be very dangerous. In fact, low blood pressure. So all of our organs get blood by going from an area of high blood pressure to lower blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So when blood is pumped out of your heart immediately, so like I said before, systolic blood pressure of 120. So your heart will generate about 120 millimeters of mercury of blood of pressure immediately when it leaves the heart. And as it goes through the entire circuit of your organs and your body, the blood pressure goes from that higher pressure to lower and lower pressures. If blood pressure is low, too low, you eliminate the forward flow of blood. So blood doesn't get to where it needs to go. So it's definitely not something you want. You don't want low blood pressure, especially if you're having symptoms.
You did such a good job on cholesterol. I just want to do a follow-up. When cholesterol and triglycerides are out of the desired range that you talked about, do we get physical symptoms, or is this, again, a silent thing?
So typically it is silent unless there are certain circumstances, such as if you have a triglyceride level that is severely abnormal. I'm talking really, really high. You can develop an abdominal pain, which might be a sign of something called pancreatitis, inflammation of the pancreas, which can be life-threatening and dangerous. Total cholesterol, mild elevations typically don't manifest with symptoms unless they're high enough to start predisposing to atherosclerosis, and typically a patient might present to me, a cardiologist, 10, 20, 30 years later with a mild elevation, and then now they're starting to develop blocked arteries and atherosclerosis. So they'll develop clinical atherosclerotic disease where they'll have some sort of symptom of a blocked artery, whether that be a heart attack with chest pain, whether that be claudication symptoms where they have pain in the lower extremities from blocked arteries in the lower extremities, things like that. But if they have a familial syndrome where they are genetically predisposed to have very elevated cholesterol levels, the main symptom they will see is mostly skin manifestations, things called xanthelomas, which are basically fatty tumors that develop on the face, on the hands, and elsewhere.
I'm a big fan on, you know, checking on these numbers, because obviously you'll have, as your doctor, you're my doctor, you'll have a baseline of me. And all of a sudden, hey, look at this. You know, this has always been here, but now it's this. Something we'll take a look at and maybe have to address. So how often do you, Dr. Neville, recommend that we check these numbers?
So in general, if it's a younger, healthy patient, no known history of heart disease, and they don't have a family member that was diagnosed with a heart attack at an early age of less than 50, it's reasonable to start screening at like age 20. And if it's normal, every 5 years or so, or until the age of 40. And then if patients are 45 to 65, or even that's mostly for men, it's every year or every 2 years, and women 55 to 65 every 1 to 2 years. But for me personally, I like to check a fasting cholesterol level once a year, whether it's with me or with their primary care physician, just to screen for risk factors and to make sure that they're not developing a risk over time. And blood pressure, typically, anytime you go to any doctor, for the most part, they're going to take vital signs. It's part of a normal intake. So you're being screened for it anytime you see a doctor. So I usually tell patients, you should see your primary care doctor at a bare minimum once a year. They will check your blood pressure. They'll check some routine fasting blood work. And that's when you really are looking for these modifiable risk factors that we can do something about early on, preventing the development of atherosclerosis and the development of heart disease.
Dr. Neville, I know we're at the finish line. I'm going to squeeze in one more question if you'll do it.
Sure.
And it is this. If one or more of these vital numbers that you've talked about during your program today are not where they should be, what do we need to do about it?
Without question, you need to see first of all, be under the care and direction of a physician, whether that be a primary care physician, which is either a family medicine doctor or an internist, as well as sometimes it comes to us as cardiology, which of course is our bread and butter. We're happy to manage it. But generally, you always start with diet and exercise. So exercising, we usually recommend 150 minutes, or I recommend 150 minutes of aerobic exercise per week. I tell patients break a sweat a little. You should huff and puff. Walking, unfortunately, is not going to have the cardiovascular benefits as it would if you get the heart rate up, stress the body a little bit, and break a sweat.
I know this is probably based on the individual, but generally, what's your target heart range that you'd like to see?
So what we usually recommend is you want to stress the heart to an adequate level, and it's usually a number calculation. So I'll take a patient's age. I will do 220 minus their age, and whatever that number is, 85% of that. That is the target heart rate.
Yeah,
so 85% of your age-predicted maximal heart rate.
220 minus the age and 85% of that final number.
Of that.
That's great.
That is the target.
I'm going to remember that, and I'm going to write it down on my day timer, too. That's good. I like that a lot. Is there anything you'd like to share in closing?
So I think it's very important, like I said, follow up with a physician at least once a year, get these numbers checked. Like anything else, the earlier you identify a problem and you handle it, it's always much easier and much safer than the alternative, which is secondary prevention. Oh, I already developed, you know, significant heart disease. I've had a heart attack. Now it's time to prevent having another one. So it's always better to prevent it from happening in the first place. And patients do better. They live healthier lives. The quality of their life is better. Doctor's visits are better. Less blood work, less workup. So prevention is the name of the game with almost anything in medicine, but especially in cardiovascular disease.
Deborah Heart Lung Center is accepting new patients. You can call 609-621-2080 or go to the digital platform of Deborah Heart Lung Center at demanddeborah.org. Dr. Neville, so listenable, such important information that you imparted, and I appreciate you giving us a few extra minutes. I know you helped a lot of people today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
You did a great job. Really terrific.